This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy in the car, just like you? Right now, times are really tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to make your drive around Melbourne fun. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca here, Paul on panel, Fiona on social media, and Tess is my co-host. Tess.
Thank you, Macca. Macca, we're going to now have a deep dive into that conversation around the coronavirus app called COVID Safe. To help guide us through that conversation, we have Paul Haskell-Dowland from Edith Cowan University in WA. Good morning, Paul.
A very good morning to you.
Thank you for joining us on the airwaves this morning. It must be much earlier here there than it is over here.
It's a little bit earlier, 9:46 in the morning and a beautiful sunny day in Perth.
That's not too bad. Paul, the question on everybody's mind is, can we trust COVID Safe? Is the app safe, and will it protect our privacy and information about our movements?
Unfortunately, as you can imagine, with most questions about technology, the question is not easily answered. There are many ways in which it is very safe, and there are other aspects that are a little bit more questionable. But I think the issue that most people are concerned about is the privacy aspect.
Yes.
So if we leave aside the technical issues and the fact that software doesn't work effectively on iPhones and questions over the way in which data is exchanged between devices, the actual way that data is stored is in an encrypted format. So it's in a form that cannot be read by a human. It is jumbled up in a way that makes it illegible to any normal individual. So the data itself is safe on your phone, and nothing happens with it until you are diagnosed, fortunately positive, with coronavirus, and your health practitioner then asks you, and it is an ask, it is not a requirement, to share the data from the app. And it's that transmission then of the data to this central government repository that is probably people's biggest concern. And now, the way that it is being sent is also encrypted. The way it is stored is encrypted. And the government has made some pretty significant legal determinations and drafted a new law to ensure that the data itself is protected once it is available to the government.
Well, that sounds pretty secure. Why are people concerned then, Paul?
I think it's a matter of trust, as you flagged earlier. The public, as a general rule, have seen a number of occasions where the government has had failings in how they handle data, particularly data relating to the populace. And this is another example of a technology that's been rolled out that is shrouded in secrecy. People don't understand it. There's this talk about the source code. And again, most people won't understand what that is. But what they've heard is the government hasn't released it. So it's almost as if there is something to hide. Now, the source code of the app is something that officially hasn't been released, and the source code is effectively like the plans for an engine. Mm. Most people know what an engine does, but they have no idea how it works on the inside. And it's the same with source code. We know what the app does, but we don't know how it functions.
But if you release the source code, doesn't that give people an opportunity to understand how it's created and therefore bust it, break into it?
It can do, and this is one of the reasons that's been given as to why the source code hasn't been released. It does ignore one interesting little fact, which is that the Android version of the application is written and distributed in a way that can be reverse engineered. So it is possible to turn it back into code And it has indeed been analysed a number of times now. And having seen large chunks of the code, I can be fairly confident and I'm fairly convinced that the app itself does safely store the data. And there is no mechanism that I can see in the code that would allow somebody to, having had access to the code, to be able to extract anything from it. You couldn't find somebody else's data simply by having the code.
If I can ask here, one of the challenges in this, and I understand, you know, people don't trust the government with their data. The reality is this, the phone tower, and having worked in the telecommunications industry a few years ago, I know how much data is available from phone towers as to where people are and who also is on that, you know, transmitting through that tower. Okay, it's not as accurate potentially as this. The big question, you know, that I have, Paul, is the government has released this app, and let's just for the sake of discussion say that half the phones in Australia are iPhones. This app is spectacularly ineffective on an iPhone because it needs, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the phone needs to be unlocked and open and the app at the front for it to work.
Absolutely.
Now,
that is indeed the current situation.
So, you know, my phone, as it's sitting here now, is open, it's unlocked. So it would be doing a digital handshake with Tass's phone if it's in the same situation. But if I, you know, if I don't power off my phone but effectively lock it again, which it'll do after a certain period of time, or I don't have the Bluetooth activated, it's ineffective. Why would you release an app that's compromised, that doesn't work? You know, you're saying to people, you want to go back, you want to come out of restrictions, you've got to download this app. Well, yeah, that's assuming we trust you. Let's get past that question. But the app doesn't work.
So I would argue that the app works, but not as effectively as it should do.
Yeah.
And I think what we have to recognise is that, yes, this was rushed out. And in an ideal world, you would spend a lot more time analysing the code, refining the code, optimising it, and making it work properly. And there are also alternative approaches. There is one being developed by Google and Apple,
yes,
which will resolve some of these issues, although it introduces other problems. So I think the government had a limited number of options available. The Google and Apple approach simply wasn't ready at a time when something was needed to be pushed out.
But this isn't actually doing its job, Dean. So, I mean, if half the users, let's say, are iPhone users, it's actually just not doing its job.
So I think the figures are a little bit more generous in the direction of the Android platform. So we've got one benefit there, that there's a lot of Android users who are using this platform. And yes, there's a lot of iPhone users who, because of the way they use their phones, will not be using it in an appropriate way, and it won't be functional for them. But the software itself is continuously being updated. So I think the Android version is on version 16 now.
Yeah.
And so as each refined version comes along, it gets a little bit better. And in fact, the version that we're using in Australia is significantly better than the version they had in Singapore, which had very similar problems with the iPhone. And as the software is developed and refined, it will get better. And it's very likely that within the next week to 2 weeks, we will have a version which is much more effective on the iPhone. But I agree completely. It's not a fully functional solution. But you have to ask, is it better to have something that partially works and is effective to help some?
I see that there are three key issues here. One is trust. And this is really about lack of trust in government to have access to our data. The second issue is the secrecy in which some of the information about the way in which this thing has been designed has not been made available. So therefore, it's actually creating another set of problems. And the third set of issues are the technical issues associated with the construct of the app, which are not yet resolved and therefore probably, you know, decreasing confidence in this.
It gives people a false sense of security. They believe if they download the app, this is going to enable the restrictions to be lifted earlier and will help with diagnosing and isolating community transmission. Great. But it's actually not doing that. That's what concerns me, is that people's behaviour will actually probably change a little because they think the app is going to detect, you know. I mean, if I was a corporation putting this app out, making the claims that some of the political leaders are...
One of our listeners asks, Macker, is this false advertising?
Well, the ACCC, Rocket Rod Sims, would be very interested, you know, saying it'll do this when actually it doesn't. So, I mean, that's what concerns me, is that it doesn't do what it says it will, and perhaps over time it will. But we're actually... It's almost like people are being... If you need to download this app, Paul, you know, so we can all come out of lockout early. It doesn't actually work as effective as we say it will, but we want you to download it. It's actually a bit dishonest, I think.
It could certainly be interpreted that way, and I wouldn't disagree that the way that it has been launched was probably too early. It should have had a little bit more opportunity to be refined.
Yeah.
And clearly is not delivering. Unfortunately, the political parties have not been entirely honest about the reliability of the app, and it's only recently that we've had observations from government representatives confirming that the app is not reliable in specific cases. And obviously the iPhone is a fairly major limitation in this app deployment.
Paul, thank you very much for your time this morning, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and your insights. There's been a lot of talk about this. We will continue to monitor this, and perhaps we might ask you to come back and join us again in the future in the next couple of weeks.
And you know, there's a great article on The Conversation, How Safe is COVID Safe and What You Should Know About the App's Issues and Bluetooth. Fiona, our producer, will put that up on our Twitter and our Facebook. And thank you so much, Paul. Really interesting to talk to you.
Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Cheers.
You too.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.